COVID-19 vaccines for healthy children and pregnant women. Health and Human Services Secretary and vaccine critic Robert Kennedy Jr. made the announcement on social media Tuesday. I'm Christina Onnestad, reporting for Pacifica Radio.
WPFW, Washington.
Welcome to Africa Now. Today's show features African Liberation Day commemorated. Africa Now is next. Welcome to the show. I'm Moise Mutale. The music in the background is Africa Unite by Bob Marley and the Wailers. First, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank you for supporting Africa Now and WPFW during the recently concluded spring membership drive. Because of your continued unwavering support, WPFW has been a site of resistance in defense of truth, justice, and culture for 48 years. Thank you for being in solidarity with our mission to build a better world one broadcast at a time. Today, Africa Now goes into its archive to commemorate African Liberation Day, which was 3 days ago on Sunday, May 25. At this critical time for the African world, and also this year being the year in which we commemorate the centenarian birthdays of freedom fighters Malcolm X, Patrice Lumumba, and Frantz Fanon, Africa Now will continue to reflect on Pan-Africanism and liberation with a series of programs. Thus, the past few weeks, there has been a reflection on Fanon, and as part of WPFW's special Malcolm X 100th birthday commemoration last week, we featured a show with the Kenya Organic Intellectuals Network focusing on Malcolm X's impact on their work and Africa's impact on Malcolm X. The series with the Kenya Organic Intellectuals Network will also feature discussions on Frantz Fanon and Patrice Lumumba. As mentioned before, May 25 is marked yearly as Africa Liberation Day. Africa Now goes into its archive to commemorate the special occasion with speeches by activists of the Pan-African and African liberation movements. The speeches occurred during 2 days of various activities in May 1974, that was on May 24 and May 25 in Washington, D.C. to commemorate African Liberation Day. The program of the 2 day session included panel discussions at Howard University, marches and demonstrations, including one to the White House, and a festival at Malcolm X Park. The organizer of the event was the African Liberation Support Committee, ALSC. And the aim of the program was to express solidarity of the liberation struggle of the African people on the continent and globally. Today we feature portions of speeches during the activities. First, we begin with poet and activist and an at-large member of the African Liberation Day Support Committee, Imamu Amiri Baraka. He is followed by Saladin Mohamed of the African People's Party. That speech by Saladin Mohamed will be followed by a portion of a speech by Kwame Ture of the All African People's Revolutionary Party during a panel discussion. The full 2 day session to commemorate African Liberation Day in May 1974, organized by the African Liberation Support Committee, ALSC, is available in Howard University's digital Howard website at www.dh.howard.edu/IAH_ALC74/. Again, it's dh.howard www.iah.edu/iah_alc74/. The material is made possible through a generous donation and support of longtime activist Dr. Abdul Al-Kalimat of the African Liberation Support Committee, whom we featured on our show. This footage was filmed for the Howard University Institute for the Arts and Humanities by Harold Burke. First, you'll hear Amiri Baraka, and that's followed by a speech by Saladin Mohammed.
Imamu Baraka, who has been on the Executive Committee of African Liberation Support Committee since its inception, is the Chairman of the Congress of African People. I don't think I need to say much more in the way of introduction to him. Brother Imamu Amiri Baraka. Thank you. Glad to see so many people here today. A lot of people said that we would be able to see more black people get together like this, like we did in 72, 73. But I think that from the kind of crowd that we see here today, we see more and more that the focus of political activism is growing a little sharper. Although I would like to say I still, from the aroma in the air, you know what they say, the weed of crime bears bitter fruit. Some of y'all getting so high you don't even know where you at. But when you come down, it's still gonna be the same place. But I'd like to say a little bit about what we are trying to do. Trying to bring together with the African Liberation Support Committee and Black United Front, Progressive Black United Front, to support the liberation movements on the continent of Africa, but also to begin to connect the movement here in North America. That is to begin to show the relationship between the Black Liberation Movement here in North America and the struggles that are going on in the West Indies and the continent of Africa, and indeed, everywhere black people are. Usually our problem in our struggle is that we lack the vehicles of struggle. We lack the vehicles of struggle usually because we have incorrect understanding of what the struggle is about. We don't have usually a correct ideology. Our ideology is usually bits and pieces of anything anyone has ever said to us. Bits of our bad education, bits of whatever kind of psychological oppression that we're going through. But we never sit down unless we're in some organized circumstance to begin to put together a clear ideology that will tell us what is our condition, who we are, and what we have to do to change it. African Liberation Support Committee is beginning to bring together diverse organizations, diverse political tendencies. But throughout those tendencies, there can be found first a tendency towards revolutionary nationalism. That is, here in North America and all over the world, we as black people, as Africans, suffer from racial oppression, from racism. From the time that capitalism expanded into Africa, from the time of the slave trade, taking those 100 million Africans out of Africa, to the time when at the end of the 19th century, they sat down in Berlin and divided Africa and the rest of the world and began the imperialist development, So the force of racism has developed in the world. And many people think that racism just floats around in the air. They can never tell you where racism comes from. But racism comes from the fact of slavery. Racism comes from the fact of the colonialization, the colonization of Africa. And you cannot talk about the development of Europe. You cannot talk about the development of America. You cannot talk about the Industrial Revolution. You cannot talk about modern capitalist technology unless you are talking about slavery, unless you are talking about the colonization of Africa. When you try to put together an ideology, you have to understand first, how did you get here? And since you got here, what has happened to you? Because you're not the same thing you was when you were on the continent, but one thing that keeps us in one particular relationship to this world is the fact that we are African people. But we are African people here in North America. We're African people who have undergone a great many changes. One of the things that we have learned, brothers and sisters, being Africans in North America, is that we must always, at base, put together independent political movements. Even though we must not be so reactionary as to say we won't work with this group or we won't work with that group, we should be willing to work with anybody who is against racism and who is against imperialism, because finally those are the enemies of everybody in the world. But at the same time, we have to put together independent movements that can work and struggle around the priorities of our people in America, in the West Indies, and on the continent of Africa. At the time of the Revolutionary War, people told us they wanted to free themselves from British mercantilism. George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and the rest of them folks, and we went for it. We helped them drive the British out of America because they told us they would free us. I think they was giving out $50 at that time. We went for it, drove the British out, but we got drove back on the land. Civil War came. The northern industrial capitalists was trying to whip the southerners, trying to take control of the economy. Monopolies were forming. The banks were getting ready to rip off America. So they came to black people and they said, look, if you will help us beat these southerners, if you will help us beat these southerners, we will give you 40 acres and a mule. In other words, they was gonna say it was a socialist revolution. They was gonna give us the means of production. They was gonna give us 40 acres and a mule. So we went for it. We beat the southerners. We destroyed them. But what happened? We did not put together independent political movements to struggle after the North had made their deal with the South. And when the North made their deal with the South, after we got rid of our militias, after they pulled the Northern troops out, then they brought in the Ku Klux Klan and the Knights of the White Camellia and the Pale Faces. And they destroyed the Reconstruction governments. All them first Negro congressmen and first Negro senators, they lynched them. They drove them out of those state assemblies. And they drove us back into slavery, and they called that the redemption of the South. Because we had no independent political movements. We had not put together the independent black political movements, no black united fronts, no revolutionary political parties. We were willing to make coalitions without first having an organized political instrument to make coalitions with. We have, every time we have tried to make coalitions without first consolidating our base, we have been ripped off. But now we understand. We are no longer the American peasant. We are no longer the Afro-American peasant. Imperialism brought us to the North to fight this war. Imperialism brought us to the North and made us a working class. Imperialism brought us to the North and put us in its factories. Imperialism brought us to the North when it wanted to rip off Puerto Rico, when it wanted to rip off Cuba, when it wanted to rip off the Philippines. And imperialism brought us to the North so that when the international capitalists fell out after they had divided Africa, when they had a falling out and they wanted to kill each other, then they inducted us into their army to make the world safe for democracy, and they call that World War I. We are change. We are in the North. We are industrial people. We are urban people. During the 30s, people had been influenced by the Russian Revolution and the creation of the first socialist state. And whatever anybody tells you, the only thing finally that will solve our problems is a revolution. I know everybody knows that. Everybody here certainly knows that. You must know that. But we went for that in the 30s. And instead of a revolution, what do we get? We got the UAW. We got the AFL-CIO. We got a lot of backward trade unions. And you can barely tell the difference now between the United Auto Workers and General Motors. Ain't too much difference between the trade union and the capitalists, because they both represent the same interests. They are both racist. They are both capitalists. They both objectively represent the interests of international imperialism.
Assalamu alaikum. I will attempt to be very brief. And Brother Sufu will make a more in-depth and a historical analysis of what we are attempting to say. First, we want to attempt to deal with the question of imperialism and the question of racism. We think that it's very, very key for us to ask ourselves, how do we deal with those questions? Do we deal with those questions as an oppressed class in the United States? I mean, do we deal with those questions as oppressed United States citizens? Or do we deal with the question of imperialism as a colonialized nation? Now, I think we must understand that if we deal with it as a colonialized nation, then it will be a qualitative difference. Our answer will be qualitatively different from the answer that we will get if we dealt with it as an oppressed minority, American citizens. I think many times brothers and sisters talk about national liberation. I think African people historically, who have always had a horizontal relationship, not a vertical relationship, a horizontal relationship to the oppressor nation, you know, not an upright relationship, not a vertical relationship, but a horizontal relationship. We have to ask ourselves, you know, did brothers and sisters participate in the struggle historically because they saw themselves as being some kind of oppressed class? Were we duped into believing that? As Queen Mother used to say, was the making of a Negro, you understand, the converting us from being a colonialized nation into being American Negroes, thinking that a primary contradiction is a class contradiction? We must understand that we are a legitimate nation, that there's a cultural contradiction that is never ending, a cultural contradiction that clearly distinguishes the two types of workers that exist in the United States today. Are we black workers a part of the United States or the oppressor nation? Or are we a colonized nation in which the oppressor nation attempts to reap super profits from? And we have to ask ourselves that. We have to ask ourselves, what does national liberation mean to us? Is that a radical term for assimilation? Does it mean that we're going to fight hard to be an equal part, you understand, of this culturally backward society? I mean, are we fighting, you understand, to legitimize ourselves, you know, as African Americans? Are we trying to be African American, or are we struggling for the independence, the total liberation of African people? We have to ask ourselves that, brothers and sisters. We have to ask ourselves. Now, when we deal with the question of imperialism and racism, when we deal with the question of imperialism and racism, if we don't understand the nature of our historical oppression, then it will manifest itself in our tactics, and we will begin to make premature alliances. You understand? We will make alliances for reasons, you understand, not clearly understood, you understand, as an oppressed people, as an oppressed nation, as a colonized nation. Many times, you will find brothers and sisters who recognize that we have a race-class contradiction. It's a race-class problem. And when scientific nasties begin to deal with the economic contradiction, many times the left will co-opt that because you have brothers and sisters who don't understand historical materialism trying to deal with dialectical materialism. And we must understand that we will not know the social laws, you understand, that govern the actions of our people unless we understand historically what our people went through. When we deal with the question that Shockley talked about, an inferior people, anytime that he dehumanized us, he can talk about an inferior nation because he programmed our nation. Can we understand that? He programmed our nation. Now we must raise the national consciousness of our people so that that defeatism, so that inferiority complex, so that I have to be an American or I am not human kind of mentality can be totally erased from their minds. We must understand that you find brothers and sisters, when they struggle and deal with the question, you know, of the contradiction, you know, in the schools, the contradiction in the plants, you understand, the whole economic and social contradiction in this country, are we striving to legitimize the United States and to say that now, because we have assimilated into it, then the imperialism that exists on the continent is now more humanistic? If we say that we have been the most oppressed, that we have been culturally castrated, and if we struggle to be a part, African Americans, of that international oppressive system, then we will further legitimize the exploitation of brothers and sisters in Africa. We will legitimize that because we will say that we have lost the most, and we still see that we can be a part of it. We have lost the most. We have lost over 100 million brothers and sisters. And is our struggle to legitimize it? I mean, has the social and the cultural contradiction been seeped so deeply into even his economic institutions that in this period, the primary contradiction is a racial contradiction? I mean, don't African people think that it's an honor to get promoted to boss in this society? Not because we have no typical bourgeois class, but because we have been dehumanized and we think that our objective, you understand, is to be a part of the God race, the God nation. Can we understand that? A brother said that we were the most privileged slaves in the world, that we are the only slaves who can have Cadillacs and television, that we the only slaves can walk around with diplomas, doctors, that we the only slaves, you understand, that they will give us some kind of title to some kind of business, but we don't control the means of production. Let us ask ourselves, what does the means of production mean to a colonized nation, and what does the means of production mean to a black American? What does it mean? What does it mean? I mean, if we say that there's a social contradiction, what do we mean by a social contradiction? If we talk about national liberation, is it a geopolitical definition? I mean, can we clearly see that we must see what our nation is, see the distinction between our nation and the oppressing nation? I mean, do we continue to delegitimize, you know, the rebellions that is taking place? I'm not talking about whether they were organized or not. I'm saying that they reflect, you understand, the dissatisfaction, you understand, of a colonized nation. They reflected, you understand, an ill treatment. They reflected, you understand, a continued resistance, not of no economically exploited class, but a colonized and culturally castrated people, a nation. Now we got to be very clear on this, brothers and sisters. When we deal with the question of national liberation and the class struggle, we say that it can go on synonymously. We say, one, that our struggle for national liberation, we, while being in the citadel, being in the base, the material base for imperialism, for monopoly capitalism, that the less the oppressor nation, you understand, receives from the African colony, the harder he will have to come down on the so-called white proletariat. Can we understand that? When he comes down very, very hard on the white workers, then we will precipitate the class struggle. that's taking place not in our nation, but in the oppressor nation. We're not saying that there's no class contradiction within the United States, but we say that our primary concern is a struggle for national liberation, that we got to deal with a universal principle. Malcolm said, get your backyard together. He meant consolidate. He meant when you deal with the questions of alliances and coalitions, you must deal from a position of strength and not from a position of weakness. We go around making alliances with people. We haven't even consolidated no base in the African continent. Haven't even consolidated no base. Many of us think that we organize cadres on the campus that we got a base. We ain't got no base. We have to understand that. When we talk about going inside the factories, are we having brothers and sisters to struggle around our national interest or some class interest? We have to ask ourselves. When we talk about better education, are we talking about the principle of better education, or do we want better United States education? We're talking about a national question, brothers and sisters. If we talk about better housing, or we talk about better United States housing, or better housing as a nation? See, we have to ask ourselves that. Anytime we engage into any level of organizing and mobilizing our people, it must reflect a national concern. When we deal with the question of a cultural revolution, let's understand that African people need a cultural revolution. There got to be a distinction, a line of distinction, qualitatively drawn between what we mean as a colonized nation, between a working class, and what the oppressor means. What the oppressor means. When we deal with the question of the means of production, when we talk about controlling the institutions and not controlling the means of production, what do we mean, brothers and sisters? What do we mean? You know, we don't want to control, you know, the Board of Education and still be controlled by monopoly capitalism in this country. We don't want to be a part of DuPont. He is our enemy. Racism is neocolonialism. That we must deal with the question when African people begin to wake up and realize that they're a nation, and that historically that this country has not served in the best interest of this colonized nation, that we're going to move to another point qualitatively. We're going to move to another point that you will have brothers and sisters who may not be social theoreticians who will have political consciousness. See, brothers and sisters think that because you are theoretically articulate that you are politically developed. Well, I know some brothers and sisters who will use their money, who will shelter brothers and sisters in their houses, who will use their cars, who will use their telephones. That must be political consciousness. But I know some brothers and sisters who are so theoretically astute, who have all the statistics, and they won't give up no bread to help a brother get out on bail. You know, they won't shelter a brother or a sister. You know, now what is political consciousness? What is national consciousness? What is national liberation? I think Brother Sufu, being older than I, you know, his analysis possibly being more keener than mine, and me still being a student, you know, a student of struggle, evolving from struggle, from day-to-day activities, you understand, with some kind of concrete theory. We don't profess to have the total solution, but we must say that anytime you make a demand, you understand, or anytime you have a consequence and you don't make no demand, then that's criminal. That you have all kinds of things jumping off all over the world, but there's no demands being made. And the only demand, you understand, that's being made in this period, you understand, is to change the American structure so that we can be a part of that. And I say that as Pan-African nationalists, our objective is not to be a part of that. I want to attempt to bring on Brother Sufu, and I say attempt to bring him on because he's been on. The brother is in his 70s, numerically. I think that the brother has went through different stages of struggle and has evolved with a more dialectical kind of understanding, you know, of our present situation. And I think that many of what appears to be the emotional concerns of brothers and sisters, if we were really scientific, we could put them together and they will actually reflect a national sentiment. They will reflect a national sentiment because we don't project any kind of national effort. We will always say that brothers and sisters are adventuristic. The reason why our brothers and sisters are adventuristic when they talk about national liberation is because the media, you understand, has conditioned us how to respond to certain kinds of action, has taught us to respond to certain kinds of action. Now, tactically, we may disagree with many brothers and sisters, but if we asked ourselves what has been the sentiment behind all of maybe those incorrect tactics, but what has even, you understand, provoked them to do anything? We must ask ourselves. And to attempt to answer that, I will attempt to bring on Brother Sufu. I'll say salam alaikum.
Again, Africa Now is going into its archives to commemorate African Liberation Day, which was on Sunday, May 25. At this critical time for the African world, and also as this year being the year in which we commemorate the centenarian birthdays of freedom fighters Malcolm X, Patrice Lumumba, and Frantz Fanon, Africa Now will continue to reflect on Pan-Africanism and liberation with a series of programs. Thus, Africa Now is going into its archives today to commemorate African Liberation Day with speeches by activists of the Pan-African and African liberation movements. The speeches occurred during 2 days of various activities in May 1974. That was on May 24th and May 25th, 1974 in Washington, D.C. to commemorate African Liberation Day. Today, first you heard a speech by poet and activist and at-large member of the African Liberation Day Support Committee, Emiri Baraka, and he's followed by Saladin Muhammad of the African People's Party. The music in the background is Kingdom of Discipline by Sun Ra, and we play that remembering Sun Ra's birthday, which is May 22nd. You're listening to Africa Now on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C., your jazz and justice station. And now you hear a portion of a speech by Kwame Ture of the All African People's Revolutionary Party during a panel discussion.
My brothers and my sisters, good afternoon. I apologize to you for being late. Unfortunately, yesterday was the only free day we had, and our brothers, the red man, called on us and asked us to come to Minnesota. They had to go. Our baggage got crossed. I didn't get into D.C. until early this morning, and I hadn't changed my clothes in 2 days. I had to try and collect my baggage and go home and take a shower. I apologize for being late. It is not the tendency of our party to ever be late, recognizing that we're revolutionaries. We must always be on time. But also, I'm sure you know, as revolutionaries, sometimes there are forces which we cannot control. And what we must seek to do is, out of the most negative, make something positive. Well, something positive did happen, incidentally, even though I was late last night. This morning, about 4:30 in the morning, I was at the Detroit airport, and I saw Brother Muhammad Ali, and that's positive. That's showing up positive. I want to thank the African Liberation Support Committee on behalf of the All African People's Revolutionary Party for inviting us to come and speak before you. We take this gesture as a gesture of genuine solidarity, a gesture of genuine brotherhood, which must exist inside our community in order for us to understand what each other is saying. On that behalf, I would like to particularly thank Brother Imamu Baraka, a showing off struggler for black people. I would like to thank Brother Owusu Saduki, a showing off warrior. And our party would also like to thank Brother Gene Locke, Brother Juhulu Gene Locke. We want to thank you not only for the invitation which you extended to us and the genuine show of brotherhood, but We want to thank you for the struggle you've been waging on behalf of our people scattered all over the world. Brother Baraka, we know him well. We must know him because he's our history now. We know him since Harlem with the Black Spirit House. We saw his turn and his uncompromising principles as he moved forward, constantly pushing on behalf of his people. We saw him put down the pen and pick up organizing and pick up the pen and carry on the pen and carry on organizing at the same time. It's not an easy task for any revolutionary. Brother Owusu Saduki, we thank him properly. It is he who has been the leader of the African Liberation Support Committee. It is he who has been the driving force of the committee. It is he who has been mobilizing and channeling the nationalist feelings of black people in America properly. Black people owe him a great deal of thanks. We must understand properly what we're doing. If we don't have correct interpretation, we will think that we're not moving forward. Brother Owusu called a demonstration in Washington, D.C. 2 years ago and had 30,000 black people present all around the question of Africa. Understanding this will show you how properly our people are moving. The effect of this march was so powerful that the white press didn't even mention it. Once again, believing that if they don't recognize something, it does not exist. Stupidity, arrogance. All right, I want to begin today by telling you some good news. Some good news. Now, we see this as an exchange of dialogue now. We come here to be brothers, to reason with each other, to understand what the problems are, because all of us are struggling to find the proper and correct path to the liberation of our people. That's the only thing that we want to do. We're not concerned with who said it or what said it. The question is, is it the correct way? As President Sekou Touré reminds us, that revolution knows no sentimentality. It is based on ice-cold scientific reality. As is said in our community, what it is what it is. What it is what it is. President Ahmed Sekou Touré, a warrior for Africa, strategist of the African Revolution, says that imperialism, you will find your grave in Africa. He is correct. Not only does Ahmed Sekou Touré say it, but Chairman Mao Zedong, in his address to the Afro-American community in April 16, 1968, had this to say. The evil system of colonialism and imperialism arose and throve with the enslavement of Negroes and will surely come to its end with the complete emancipation of the black people. Mao Zedong is correct. It is a black man who is going to destroy imperialism. It is Africa that is going to bury imperialism. Yes, it is. Africa is not going to bury imperialism just because Africa is the home of the black man. Africa will bury imperialism because of the crucial position that it plays in world struggle. Yes. Africa, being the richest continent on the face of the earth, is the continent which sure enough gave birth to capitalism. We can properly say that it is Africa's wealth and Africa's labor that built Europe and America. Once Africa's wealth and Africa's labor is channeled for the benefit of Africa and her scattered children, Africa will take a leap into the world which will bring the rest of the world along with it. Yes. We speak a fact now. If you don't have a correct interpretation of your history, it will make you appear as if your people are not moving anywhere. If you don't have a correct and proper interpretation of history, you'll be turned around. The Chinese have a very beautiful statement. Of course, you know I'm an Nkrumist. Nkrumah says that thought without action is empty. He says action without thought is blind. Revolution, says he, are made by men who think as men of actions and act as men of thoughts. The Chinese put it a little bit tighter. The Chinese say, no participation, no right to observation.
of us are struggling in our own little way to help and bring together our people. All of us are struggling to help bring the revolution that's going to bring Sharon of socialism to the world. And while all of us struggle to do this, at least we must have some common understanding. If a man is not participating in the struggle, if he has no history of struggle, he has no right to speak of struggle. This is absolutely necessary. If you don't understand it, you don't understand revolution. Each thing has its own internal dynamism. Each thing has its own contradiction, and it is its conflict with its own internal contradiction that produces change. Thus, a man standing on the outside cannot observe those contradictions. It is only a man on the inside who's feeling the weight of those contradictions that can speak properly to it. You must understand it properly. If you don't understand it properly, people will be interpreting the history and they've never struggled. They've never participated. Of course, America, being a capitalist country, confuses us so much that sometimes we think that the participant can't observe. We're told that he is not objective. And the only objective one is the one who's not participating. Nonsense. Clear and proper nonsense. As organizers in the black community, our party would like to share with you an experience. If you're organizing in your community constantly 24 hours a day and a brother comes to you to give you some advice and he's not organizing, pay no attention to him. As a matter of fact, encourage him to organize with you. Say to him, my brother, please come and put your theory into practice in the black community. Let us see together how it will work. The only task of revolution is grounded in concrete reality. Many people a few years ago thought the world was flat, they sure enough did. They thought it and thought it and thought it, but their thoughting and thoughting and thoughting did not make the world flat. The world was round, always has been round, and will only be proven round when it's proven in concrete reality. Thus all theories must be applied to concrete reality and must be put into proper practice. We are Nkrumahs, that's our ideology. Our objective is Pan-Africanism. We define Pan-Africanism as the total liberation and unification of Africa under scientific socialism. We understand that when this objective is achieved, the black man will be free all over the world and Africa will play a powerful force in world socialist revolution. The question that we have before us is not a question of the class struggle. Any serious revolutionary knows the class struggle is the motivating struggle, is the major struggle. That's not the question. The question before us is the question of what is the role of nationalism and what phase has the African Revolution now entered? I tell you that the only question before the black community today is the question of nationalism. That is the only question. Anyone who interprets properly the history of his people knows that black people have been the vanguard of any serious anti-capitalist struggle in America. Anybody knows that? History is known in its concrete reality. If we study properly the forces in this country, we will see the black people have been that force. They've had no choice to be that force because they've been at the bottom of the ladder. Yes. We know the evil system of capitalism. The black man knows it better than any other man in the world. Better. We know this vicious system seeks to take from the laborers their fruits of their labor. We know that. We know its viciousness is to be found in the fact that those who labor do not labor. We know that. We must know that. We have suffered the worst form capitalism has ever taken, slavery. Under this brutal imperialism, not even did we get a dollar down or a dollar a week. All of our labor went to the profits of white slaveholders. We know the system of capitalism. The black man has lived it. The black man is the most victimized, vicious victim of capitalism. What Africa has suffered, no other force on earth has suffered. If you understand revolutionary theory, then you understand it. It is those who are at the bottom scientifically that are the true vanguard of the revolutionary force. Thus, as to the question of whether or not the black man is the vanguard, there is no discussion. Of course he is the vanguard. Of course he is the vanguard. There's no discussion on that. There's no question on that. You must understand revolution properly now. You deal with it carefully. I tell you, the black man knows capitalism more than any other man. In Africa, the black man has worked and worked and worked and worked and worked and worked, and today he has nothing to show for his labor. All of it going to European imperialism. In the West Indies, the black man has worked and worked and worked and worked and worked and worked and worked, and today he has nothing to show for it. All of his profits ripped off by British imperialism. In South America, in Brazil, in Panama, where my grandfather died digging the Panama Canal, the African has worked and worked and worked and worked and worked, and someone else has stolen his profits. In America, the black man has worked and sweated and bled and worked and worked and worked and worked and worked, and someone else has ripped off his profits. Anybody understanding the history of their people will know that their people must move against capitalism. It cannot be justified. There's no possible way to justify it. That's not the issue. The only issue before us today is the issue of nationalism. Anybody who knows revolution knows that nationalism is a prerequisite to serious anti-imperialist struggle. It is not the final stage, of course not. But it is the prerequisite for serious anti-imperialist struggle. Nationalism is the only question before us. The problem that the black man has in America is that because of negative interpretations of his history, he's incapable of embracing wholeheartedly African nationalism, which is his only just nationalism. We condemn imperialism because imperialism has snatched other people's lands. That's why we condemn it. It's the only reason why we condemn it, because it has snatched their lands, it has taken their wealth, and it's taken their labor for their benefit. When people struggle, they struggle to regain the land so they can use the wealth and the labor for the benefit of the people inside the land. Of course, if they don't go towards a socialist system, we know contradictions will develop and it will go towards socialism anyway. Thus, our job is to push it towards socialism at all times. And scientific reality, grounded in truth, grounded in purely truth. We must push those countries towards socialism. But we must know what our proper nationalism is. In order to have a nation, one of the prerequisites is land. One must have land. Yes. Without land, there's no nation. We know that justice is not subjective, it is objective. Totally objective, grounded in scientific reality. And we know that in order for a revolutionary battle to succeed, its principles must be correctly grounded in justice. Scientifically so. That's why we fight for socialism. It is the most just system. Scientifically so. Not based on sentimentality. That's why we fight for it. Thus, when we organize our fight, we must know properly what is our just nationalism. The just demand for the just homeland will give you the just nationalism. Unjust demand for an unjust homeland will give you fascism. Yes. There is no doubt that this land, America, belongs to the red man. It's his land. His land. When you talk about any national question in this country, he is the first man that you must speak to. Justice requires and demands that. Truth is a heavy weapon. It's a heavy weapon. But King used to tell us time and time again, truth crushed the earth shall rise again. Rise again. If your struggle is not based in truth and justice, you will not gain it. At all, you cannot. That's why whenever there's an unjust struggle, those who wage the struggle try to make the struggle sound just. Example would be America in Vietnam. America tried to make it appear as if she was waging a just struggle in Vietnam. Even Hitler. Hitler didn't make his system sound unjust. He made it a just system. Yes, everybody tries to make it just. But we know that only the sure enough just one is going to triumph.
You just been listening to a portion of speeches from a commemoration of the African Liberation Day, which took place on May 24th and May 25th, 1974 in Washington, D.C. And this was a series of events, a two-day session, which included panel discussions at Howard University, marches and demonstrations, including one to the White House and a festival at Malcolm X Park. The organizers of the event was the African Liberation Support Committee. And the aim of the program was to express solidarity of the liberation struggle of the African people on the continent and globally. You just heard a portion of a speech by Kwame Ture of the All African People's Revolutionary Party during a panel discussion. Earlier on, you heard poet and activist and at-large member of the African Liberation Day Support Committee, Amiri Baraka. And that was followed by a speech by Saladin Mohammed of the African People's Party. The Tuesday session to commemorate African Liberation Day in May 1974, organized by the African Liberation Support Committee, is available in Howard University Digital Howard website at dh.howard.edu/IAH_ALC74/. Again, that's dh.howard.edu/IAH_ALC74/. The material is made possible through a generous donation and support of longtime activist Dr. Abdul Al Kalamat of the African Liberation Support Committee, whom we have featured on our show. The footage was filmed for Howard University Institute for Arts and Humanities by Dr. Harold Burke. The music in the background is Basilica by Ramsey Lewis. And we play that remembering Ramsey Lewis' birthday, which was May 27. That's it for African Hour for today. I'm your host, Muiza Muntali. Up next is Headline News, followed by Shanana Hussein Alamin, which looks at issues in Northern Africa and the Middle East. And that's followed by the Women's Collective Sophie's Parlor, which is followed by The Browder File with Tony Browder, which is followed by Black Agenda Radio with Margaret Kimberly. And that's followed by Kombit Lakai with Eugenia Charles looking at issues in Haiti. Check out Africa Now on Facebook and on X, formerly Twitter. That's at Africa Now Online. Also, Africa Now is archived on iTunes Podcast and on SoundCloud. Search under Africa Now Online on SoundCloud. That's Africa Now Online on SoundCloud. Thanks to Africa Now's executive producer and co-host James Pope. And thanks to our engineers, Michael Nasella and Claire Chapman. And thanks to our research fellow volunteers, Chanda Kozer and Funan Gonda, and our Africa World Now Project Collective of Dr. Tasmin Siddiqui, Dr. Keisha Khan Perry, Dr. Josh Myers, and Kurt Erdison. And thanks to the entire team here at WPFW. And thank you for joining us, and thanks for your continued support. We're going to leave with a closing song entitled Not Yet Uhuru by Leta Mbulu. Thank you. Have a great day. Have a great week. And stay safe.
for WPFW News in Washington, I'm Sue Goodwin. Today is Wednesday, May 28th. Here are some headlines. Gaza's health ministry said today that at least one Palestinian civilian was killed and 48 others were injured yesterday after Israeli soldiers opened fire at a food distribution hub outside Rafah. In a press briefing in Geneva, a UN spokesperson said that most of the injuries were caused by Israeli military gunshots. The Israeli military stated that it only fired warning shots to regain control over a chaotic situation. The incident occurred when large crowds of Palestinians broke through fencing to receive food from the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, a controversial U.S. and Israel-backed program that is taking over the handling of desperately needed aid. The UN and other agencies have rejected the aid distribution system, which uses U.S. security contractors, as unethical and unworkable. And on Sunday, the foundation's executive director, Jake Wood, resigned and said, quote, "It is not possible to implement this plan while also strictly adhering to the humanitarian principles of humanity, neutrality, impartiality, and independence, which I will not abandon." Close quote. In more news, amid an intensification in the Russo-Ukrainian war, Russia once again reiterated that a future ban of Ukraine from NATO is a necessary precondition for peace. This condition would likely never be accepted by President Zelensky, casting a dark shadow over ongoing peace talks. Violence in the form of drone strikes have escalated to record levels recently, and Ukraine warned today that 50,000 Russian troops were massing for an attack in the northeast. Analysts are split on whether these attacks represent an abandonment of the peace process or if Russia seeks to utilize its burst of aggression as a bargaining chip. Putin has stated a willingness to continue the war until his military fortunes change, and Ukraine just signed a military-industrial deal with Germany to jointly produce missiles, signaling that both sides are prepared to continue. And the Supreme Court ruled on a significant case involving indigenous rights. Here's WPFW's Noah Portner.
Yesterday, the Supreme Court rejected an appeal to protect Apache sacred land in Oak Flat, Arizona, from development into a copper mine, all but ensuring its construction. The Oak Flat mine would be opened in Tonto National Forest, a piece of federal land which borders the official Apache Indian Reservation. The mine is near the town of Superior, Arizona, which has been the site of mining and conflict for over 100 years. In its appeal, the group Apache Stronghold invoked religious freedom, historical precedent of federal protection, and an 1852 treaty. The mining developers cited a 2014 agreement with Congress and the fact that the mine is expected to yield $1 billion a year to Arizona's economy. Surprisingly, Justices Neil Gorsuch and Clarence Thomas were the dissenting justices, with Justice Gorsuch saying, quote, "I have no doubt we would find this case worthy of our time. Faced with the government's plan to destroy an ancient site of tribal worship, we owe the Apache no less." End quote. For a justice known for his conservative ideology, Gorsuch has been surprisingly supportive